Hey guys, it's Stacy
and Katie,
and you're listening to the latest episode of Mothers Who Kill.
Welcome back, guys. In for some more crazy, I guess.
Another episode.
You guys seem to really
like the psychotic ones,
the ones that are really like
mind-blowing
out there. Today, we're going to discuss the case of Diane Downs, who, before Susan Smith and before Andrea Yates...
She was the OG.
She's the OG. And let me tell you something, guys. This woman is narcissistic as fuck. Like, just no emotion. All about herself. Just doesn't give a damn. Like, really just doesn't give a damn. All right, so we're just going to jump right into it, guys. Diane Downs was born Elizabeth Diane Fredrickson on August 7th, 1955, to Wesley Linden and Willa Dean Fredrickson. Diane accused Wesley of sexual abuse when she was 12. And as a freshman at Moon High Valley School, Moon Valley High School, Diane dressed like a grown woman of the 1960s. Not really sure what that means, but okay. And dated older boys. One of those older boys being Stephen Downs. The pair quickly became inseparable as they roamed the streets of Phoenix looking for fun. The pair graduated together, but was briefly separated when Diane enrolled at Pacific Baptist Bible College in Orange, California, and Steve enlisted in the Navy. However, Diane was expelled after a year due to promiscuous behavior, and after running away from home, the couple reunited and married on November 13th of 1973. Almost immediately, the marriage began to suffer as the pair fought about financial issues as well as alleged infidelities. Despite these issues, the couple's first child, a daughter named Christy, was born in 1974, with daughter Cheryl following in 1976 and son Danny in 1979. By the time Danny was born, the arguments of infidelity had become so intense that Steve had become convinced that Danny wasn't his son, but instead the product of an affair, and the couple divorced in 1980. After the divorce, Diane had wanted to become a surrogate, and despite her failing her psychiatric test twice, she gave birth to a baby girl that she named Jennifer on May 2nd of 1982. Diane turned the baby over to her intended parents, and as far as we know, this is the only time that she was a surrogate. Quick little question here. She failed her psychiatric test twice, but was still allowed to be a surrogate.
And actually gave the baby to the parents.
That's shocking that she actually gave the baby up. And you guys will understand why here in a little while. That wouldn't fly these days. If you failed your psychiatric test these days, you're not going to be able to be a surrogate. There are so many loopholes and hoops that you have to jump through to be a surrogate these days. Wouldn't happen. But anyway, Diane began to neglect her own children, often leaving them home alone with Christy, even though she was only six, or with her parents, or Steve without much notice. The children were unkempt and malnourished, but Diane was more interested in the affection of men than the well-being of her children. It was around this time that Cheryl told a neighbor of her grandparents that she was afraid of her mother. I mean, you're malnourished, your mom's running off with men, leaving you with your six-year-old sister. You know, makes sense. In 1981, Diane met Robert Nick Knickerbocker and embarked on an affair that waved her troubles away. However, to Nick, who was married, okay, Diane's kids were the equivalent to too many strings attached. He had told Diane that he had no interest in being a daddy, and he ended the affair. Within 2 years, Diane would go to extreme lengths to win him back. In April of 1983, Diane moved her and the children to Springfield, Oregon. Excuse me, guys. And on the evening of May 19th, 1983, she drove her children down Old Mohawk Road, just outside of town, pulled over to the side of the road and shot each child with a .22 caliber pistol point blank at point blank range. After shooting the children, she then shot herself in the left forearm and drove to Mackenzie Willamette Hospital at a snail's pace. Okay, question. Why do these women seem so men-obsessed? How come you cannot focus on your children instead of chasing after a man? Are you really that invalidated that you need a man's attention?
Yes. Next question.
Next question.
We were just out, I guess, sightseeing, I guess you'd say. And the kids got tired. They fell asleep in the car. So I decided to just head on home. But I saw a road I hadn't been on before. We like to take back roads. I just went down that road. There was a guy standing in the road, flagging me down. So I stopped. Everything was done in a matter of 5 or 10 seconds. He swung himself around and fired twice. One caught me in the arm. The other one I went off somewhere. Danny cried the whole way. I could hear him softly just moaning. And Christy was dying. All the blood, all the pain.
Upon arrival, emergency room staff declared 7-year-old Cheryl dead and admitted the other two with life-threatening injuries. Danny, age 3, was paralyzed from the waist down, and Christy, age 8, had suffered a disabling stroke. Dr. Stephen Wilhite had just gotten home when he heard his beeper went off. He rushed back to the hospital and recalled thinking Christy was dead. He saved her life and went to update Diane. He says that she did not shed one tear when she was asked how Christy was doing. He recalled her doing so with no emotion. Wilhite also says Diane said many unsettling things to him, like, boy, this really spoiled my vacation.
Oh, it did.
And that really ruined my new car. I got blood all over the back of it. Well, if you didn't shoot yourself.
Hold on. Can we talk about that? I got blood all over the back of it. Not the children got blood all over the back of it. Which, to me, is an admission of guilt.
Admission right there. He states that he knew within 30 minutes of talking to her that she was guilty. Suspicions also heightened when Diane phoned Nick at the hospital. When questioned by the police, Diane told the story of a shaggy-haired man who flagged her down off the side of the road while the children slept in the back seat. The man demanded her car, and when she refused, he shot her children. She claims that it was during a struggle with a man that she obtained a shot in her arm. She claims that she got away and fled to the emergency room. The forensic evidence did not match her story. There was no blood splatter on the driver's side door of the car, nor was there any gunpowder residue on the driver's side door or on the interior door panel. Knickerbocker also reported to the police that Diane had sought him and he had seemed willing to kill his wife if it meant that she could have him to herself. He stated that he was relieved when she had left for Oregon and he was able to reconcile with his wife.
Okay.
Exasperation all over the story. While her children were still in the hospital, Diane began giving media interviews, telling strange stories, and explaining her innocence. Her stories did not add up. Oh, shocker. Describing that she had taken her children sightseeing in the dark while they were sleeping did not make much sense to anyone. Police began investigating Diane and were able to locate her secret journals that explained the affair she was having with Nick and the fact that he did not want children and made her view them as a burden. Diane also did not disclose to the police that she owned a .22 caliber handgun, but both Steve and Nick informed them that she did. Investigators discovered that she bought the handgun in Arizona. While they were unable to find the weapon, they found unfired casings in her home with its stretcher markings from the murder weapon. The most damning evidence was the witnesses that saw her car being driven very slowly at the estimated speed of 5 to 7 miles per hour, contradicting Diane's claim that she drove to the hospital at high speed.
First of all, who goes sightseeing at night when your children sightseeing for the children when the children are sleeping?
No.
It absolutely makes
one of many baffling questions.
Makes no sense.
I just hit my cat. Started the car and left. The car door shut itself. She was giddy. She laughed. She cracked jokes. I mean, she's reenacting the gruesome shootings of her three children. She doesn't seem at all upset.
This is worse than it. Okay.
Based on this and additional evidence, Diane was arrested on February 28th of 1984, 9 months after the shooting, and charged with one count of murder and two counts each of attempted murder and criminal assault. Prosecutors argue that Diane shot her children to be free of them so she could continue her affair with Nick, as she claimed that he let it be known he did not want children in his life. Much of this case rests against her rested on the testimony of her surviving daughter, Christy, who, once she recovered her ability to speak, described how her mother shot all three children while parked on the side of the road and then shot herself in the arm. Diane was convicted on all charges on June 17th of 1984 and sentenced to life in prison plus 50 years. She was required to serve 25 years before being considered for parole. Psychiatrists diagnosed Diane with narcissistic borderline and antisocial personality disorders, labeling her as a deviant sociopath. Okay, that might be a more apt description. Most of her sentence is to be served consecutively. Cannot say that word. The judge made it clear that he did not intend for Diane to ever be free again. She was initially incarcerated at the Oregon Women's Correctional Center in Salem, but somehow she escaped from her cell on June 11th, 1987, and scaled a 18-foot razor wire fence and was on the run for 10 days, managing to evade law enforcement despite a 14-state manhunt before she was recaptured. After her recapture, she was transferred to the New Jersey Department of Corrections Clinton Correctional Facility for Women. Oh, what a mouthful. After heavy lobbying from the lead prosecutor in her case, Fred Hughey. After their recovery, Christy and Danny went to live with Hughey and his wife, who adopted them in 1986. The Salem prison was located 66 miles from their home, and during her 10 days of freedom, Hughey and his wife feared that Diane would attempt to travel there in hopes of contacting the children. Despite significant security upgrades at the women's facility after the escape, state officials accepted Hughey's argument that the risk of harm to Christy and Danny in the event of another escape was too great for Diane to remain incarcerated in Oregon.
Serving only 3 years in prison, she escaped by scaling over a barbed wire fence. Diane was now on the run and a threat once again. But she says she was looking for the bushy-haired stranger.
I wanted revenge at that time. I wanted to do some really obscene things to his body.
But instead, 11 days later, she was apprehended, hiding in a nearby house with a former cellmate's husband.
In 1994, after serving 10 years of her sentence, Diane was transferred to the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. While in prison, she earned an associate's degree in general studies. Okay. In 2010, she was located at the Valley State Prison for Women in Chowchilla, California. And I hope I said that right. I really hope I said that right. But was transferred out of the facility when it was converted into an all-male institution in 2013. Diane's sentence meant that she could not be considered for parole until 2009. Under Oregon law at the time, as a dangerous offender, Diane would have been eligible for a parole hearing every 2 years until she is released or dies in prison. In her first application for parole in 2008, excuse me, y'all, Diane reaffirmed her innocence. Over the years, I have told you and the rest of the world that a man shot me and my children, and I have never changed my story.
Yeah, but your daughter confirmed a different story. So, yeah, whatever, bitch.
Her first parole hearing was on December 9, 2008. Lane County DA wrote to the parole board, "Downs continues to fail to demonstrate any honest insight into her criminal behavior. Even after her convictions, she continues to fabricate new versions of events under which their crimes occurred." He also wrote that she alternately refers to her assailants as a bushy-haired stranger, two men wearing ski masks, or drug dealers, or corrupt law enforcement officials. Diane participated in a hearing from the Valley State Prison for Women. She was not permitted a statement but answered questions from the parole board. After 3 hours of interviews and 30 minutes of deliberations, she was denied parole. Diane faced her second parole hearing on December 10, 2010, and she was denied. Her next parole hearing was scheduled in 2010 and set for 2021. However, it was denied as well.
Downs' fourth child, the baby about to be born.
I'd like to see him try to take this baby from me. And I got pregnant because I miss Christy and I miss Danny and I miss Cheryl so much. I'm never going to see Cheryl on Earth again. And I just, you can't replace children, but you can replace the effect that they give you. And they give me love, they give me satisfaction, they give me stability, they give me a reason to live and a reason to be happy, and that's gone, they took it from me. But children are so easy to conceive.
Prior to her arrest, Diane became pregnant with a fourth child and gave birth to a daughter whom she named Amy Elizabeth a month after her trial in 1984. 10 days before Diane's sentencing, Amy was seized by the state of Oregon and adopted by Chris and Jackie Babcock, who named her Rebecca. As an adult, Rebecca appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show and ABC's 2020 discussing how she feels about her biological mother. She wrote to Diane in her younger years and has stated that she regrets it. Regarding her mother as a monster.
She's not a mother, she's a monster.
Author Anne Rule wrote a book, Small Sacrifices, in 1987, detailing Diane's life and murder trial. The book documents accounts by friends, acquaintances, neighbors, and her surviving daughter, Christy, who questions the quality of her parenting. I would think so. A made-for-TV movie, also titled Small Sacrifices, starring Farrah Fawcett. Really?
Yeah, right?
As Diane aired on ABC in 1989, Diane will have another chance for parole in 2023. We hope it is, well, denied.
Denied. I mean, yeah. Obviously.
Everybody says you sure were lucky. Well, I don't feel very lucky. I couldn't tie my damn shoes for about 2 months. It is very painful. It is still painful. The scar is going to be there forever. I'm going to remember that night for the rest of my life, whether I want to or not. I don't think I was very lucky. I think my kids were lucky. If I had been shot the way they were, we all would have died.
Lord, guys, we made it through that one.
Did it.
The fact that she...
I have so many questions.
There's so... Like, what delusion is she living in? We added some voice clips, and you guys, I hope you guys are just as intrigued and as much pissed off and more of a what the fuck is this bitch thinking like we are. The fact that she claims that children are so easily conceived. I mean, thank goodness she's in jail and can't conceive any more kids, because, excuse me. So that, my friends, is my throat saying we are done podcasting for today. We thank you guys again for the listens and
keep liking, keep sharing,
keep liking.
She's already.
Excuse me, y'all. COVID cough at its finest. Anyway, thank you guys, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.